WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. The community of Winder, Georgia, gathers for a vigil in a park to honor the victims of this week's shooting at Appalachie High School. Barrow County Sheriff Judd Smith.
Beg of you, don't let this evil get into your heart. Do not let hate get into your heart.
Earlier today, the 14-year-old suspect and his father, who was arrested for allowing his son to have a weapon, appeared in court. A Pakistani national is under arrest, accused of planning to kill Jewish people during the upcoming high holidays. Federal prosecutors say Muhammad Khan posted about his plans for Brooklyn on social media. Sentencing in former President Trump's hush money case has been postponed until November 26th. Judge Juan Merchan says he doesn't want to be seen as trying to affect the presidential election. Former Vice President Dick Cheney says he'll vote for Kamala Harris this November. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Prosecutors are pursuing a murder charge with a hate crime enhancer against an inmate of the Green Bay State Prison accused of killing his cellmate last week. Authorities say Jackson Vogel strangled Michael Laureano on August 27th and told deputies it was because Laureano was black and gay. Governor Evers opposes the idea of splitting UW-Madison from the rest of Wisconsin state universities. Here's Savannah Tomei Olson.
This idea of splitting up UW-Madison from all the other UW system schools seems to gain some momentum every once in a while.
Tell me why that's a good idea. I have no idea. I mean, we have a system. It works. It's underfunded, but it works.
A legislative committee is considering the plan. Any change to the UW system structure would require legislative approval. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
Travel back in time and experience the magic of the Minnesota Renaissance Festival. Journey through a world of armored knights, joking jesters, and enchanting fair maidens. Every weekend, August 17th through September 29th, thrill to live combat jousting, feasting on turkey legs, and shopping hundreds of unique artisans. Bring the whole family for unforgettable fun. Get your discounted tickets today at renaissancefest.com. Find your magic at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival.
Every business faces challenges.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Want to set up today's program on dueling emails. Got two interesting emails. One, I'm going to start with positive. Someone was nice enough today to send me an email saying, quote, just emailing you to tell you that you are doing great. And you introduce subject matter that others on Free Speech TV miss/ignore. That was it. I'm just emailing you to tell you you're doing great. Thank you. I appreciate that. Normally when you open up emails, it's like, okay, let's see what angry bit I'm going to get. But that was a good one. Now, on the other side, again, the polar opposite, I'm not going to use the expletive, but accused me of being a moron with an expletive. And said, I guess now you're going to jump back on the Russian hoax train. If it's on the tracks and it's steaming toward you, kind of got to think about what we're seeing. Because on Wednesday, I don't know if you saw this, but the Biden DOJ seized 32 different web domains that they say, Russians used to influence our election. They charged two employees of Russian television, the Russian state media broadcaster here in the U.S., with conspiracy to commit money laundering and conspiracy to violate the Foreign Agents Registration Act. Evidently, they had a big pile of money, about nearly $10 million that they doled out to online influencers. You know, people with a lot of Twitter followers. You know, people that Elon Musk props up and pushes their content out. Again, another reason why you buy Twitter, so you have an outweighed voice. And again, this comes back to follow the money. You look at a lot of these big right-wing commentators who have, you know, millions and millions of followers, because there's a lot of money going into pushing that out. There's a lot of money behind them, pushing them into the public sphere and creating this incestuous pool of insanity. And it's interesting, top to bottom, they're all basically the same. It's the same topics, it's the same talking points, but with a little different flair depending on who you are. And one of the things that I think, one of the guys that I've been paying attention to is this Tim Pool, who said not too long ago that we should be executing people who create, who are guilty of treason, people who treasonous, now claiming he's the victim. Evidently claiming the FBI is looking at him as a potential victim. Now, again, I don't have all the details here, but I do know there's a lot of money that's floating around the right-wing insanosphere, and the message seems very coordinated. So when you see this little bitty story here about Russian money being flowing through all of these influencers, you got to start asking yourself, where are they getting their information? Where does this stuff come from? And I've been arguing for a very long time that Russian money has burrowed its way into the entire conservative movement. It's basically co-opted the whole thing. So when you see a think tank say like, oh, I don't know, the Heritage Foundation, which used to be crazy, but at least they had some conservative values. They were tethered to some bit of reality. Now, off the beaten path, way off, and with a lot of the same kind of talking points that you would expect from Vlad and company. Now, it's one of those things where you don't believe anything until the Kremlin denies it. You have Vladimir Putin coming out saying that he would prefer Kamala Harris. And you go, really? Anybody buying that? And the answer is no. And, you know, as I look through this and I work through the details that are coming out, I know that the right is going to push this idea of it's just a Russian hoax. Anything that has Russian hands or fingerprints on it or their money, it's all a hoax. And folks, this is what inoculation looks like. This is what a right-wing media structure that's been, interestingly enough, saying, oh, it's all a hoax. Anything you hear, all a hoax. What they've actually done is they've vaccinated against reality. Because they've been told for so long, anything having to do with Russia, it's all a hoax. And I got to believe that the people who were spewing this knew they were on the take. I have to believe that they knew where the paycheck was coming from. They just never asked. And look, you know, the left got into a little bit of this trouble years ago with RT as well. Ed Schultz, Tom Hartman, a number of those folks who were on Russian television. You know, the same kind of questions. They should not be here peddling their dis and misinformation. But this goes beyond just RT on TV. This goes into our politicians. This goes into the think tank world. How come we haven't heard from the NRA at all? We've heard nothing from the NRA. And the reason? The government threw them a blowback pitch. They brushed them off the plate real quick because awash with Russian money. Or at least that's what the story is. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out as the days and weeks come and who gets charged and who's exposed. I do find it interesting that a lot of people changing positions today. A lot of people who were pro-Russia are now flipping their script to go, no, we care about Ukraine now. We should be giving Ukraine money so that they can CYOA. Going to be interesting to watch the rats scatter. because the people who've been peddling mis- and disinformation for the last decade, the light is exposing where the cash is coming from. And I don't think it's going to be good. I don't think it's going to be good. Want to hear your thoughts. Are you on there? It's all just a hoax. You know, Russia doesn't tell me anything. Or they're into everything. Money buys them into a lot of places. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So we've been talking taxes here recently on the program since Kamala Harris rolled out her own tax framework. And boy, you would think, judging on the reactions on the social medias, that she was taking away Musk's and Bezos' little toy rockets. You would think that she was really coming to do something big and make them go to bed without dinner or something crazy like that. But not so great. But here, what we've been sold over these last several decades, the biggest lie of all, and that is if we give rich people more money, we give them all the money, that somehow magically through some transfer portal or something, it's going to trickle down on the rest of us. All the folks over at the Institute for Policy Studies, they've recently released their 30th annual executive excess pay report, looking at our CEOs. And this year they focused on the bottom 100 S&P 500 firms, the race to the bottom 100, if you will. The bottom payers, that is. These are the big companies with the lowest median wages, a group that they've dubbed the low wage 100. That's why I've asked Sarah Anderson to come talk with us. Sarah is the Global Economy Project Director, also the co-editor of inequality.org. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Great to be here, Rick. Thank you.
So we've been sold this idea that we give rich people all the money. They know what to do with it. And I argue they do. They make more money for themselves.
Yeah. And part of that myth is also that these people at the top deserve to get hundreds or thousands of times more pay than the rest of us because they're so much smarter and harder working and so forth. And I think what this report shows is just what a total scam that is. We looked, as you said, at the 100 largest low-wage employers in the country and found that their CEOs on average are making 538 times as much as a typical worker at the companies they lead. And we're talking about companies that you've heard of many of these, you know, Walmart, McDonald's, Target, Home Depot, Lowe's, Starbucks, and so forth. And one of the biggest scams here is the amount of money that these companies are putting into stock buybacks. So this is when a company repurchases its own shares, and that reduces the supply of those shares and artificially pumps up the value. And most CEO pay is in some form of stock-based pay. So this is just a scam for CEOs to artificially inflate the value of their shares. That has nothing to do with them doing a bang up job or anything like that. It's just a shady financial maneuver. And the scale of the stock buyback spending by these low wage companies really took my breath away. Altogether, these 100 firms have spent over $500 billion over the last 5 years on stock buybacks. And we put that those numbers into perspective in a couple ways. One way is we compared it to all the money that these companies are spending on long-term capital investments, you know, upgrading their technology or improving their stores or, you know, building, investing in things for the long term. And almost half of these companies had spent more on these shady stock buybacks than all the money they had spent on long-term capital investments.
Because of course. Now, what's important about that is we're told that, you know, if we give these smart people all the money, they're going to reinvest it in their businesses. They're going to create new businesses. They're going to be, you can sing it with me, job creators.
Right.
And look, on its face, it sounds good. It's like anything. It sounds like a good idea. Yeah, these people, they've done a good job in certain areas of business. Maybe it'll work, but we've been trying it for 50 years. When do we go, it ain't working?
It's crazy. I mean, I'll give probably the most insane example in this report is Lowe's, the home improvement store. They spent about $43 billion over the last 5 years on stock buybacks. This just financial shenanigan to artificially inflate their shares, make their CEOs and their shareholders even richer. With that amount of money, they could have given all 285,000, I think, employees at Lowe's a $30,000 raise every year for 5 years. And that would have meant a lot to Lowe's workers because the typical Lowe's worker makes only about $32,000. And so that really breaks it down. We're not talking about symbolic amounts of money here that they're wasting to inflate CEO pay. This is money that is being siphoned away from worker wages and siphoned away from investments that could help these companies stay competitive and creating jobs in the long term.
It's why I've been saying these should be illegal. These stock buyback programs should be absolutely outlawed, or we should just tax them out of existence. Because what it is just as you've laid out, we have cut taxes on corporations. We've taxed them differently. We've given them massive amounts of loopholes to be able to avoid taxes with the belief that they're going to reinvest in their business, create more jobs, have a growing business, or at least paying their employees better, maybe better benefits, maybe better healthcare, retirement security, any of that stuff. Is any of that happening? I mean, are they contributing more to people's 401ks? Because I don't know if you've been paying attention, but my generation evidently going to be the first generation in a while to go, we can't retire because nobody has any retirement savings.
Yeah, well, we looked at that too. We looked at the 20 largest low-wage employers in the country, and almost all of these companies are going to be household names for people. And I think the only one that had spent more money contributing to their employee 401k plans than they had spent on stock buybacks over the past 5 years was Costco. Every other one, the big hotel chains where workers went on strike over the weekend, Marriott, Hilton, they've all been blowing billions of dollars on stock buybacks. And one reason they're putting so little into their 401ks is because they might brag about offering matching benefits. You know, they'll match every dollar that an employee puts into those plans up to a certain amount. But if you are working on the financial edge and working really for poverty wages, you can't afford to take advantage of matching. Matching is meaningless to you. And one example there is Chipotle. I looked at of the Chipotle employees who are eligible to participate in their 401k plan, 92% of them had zero balances. They have not been able to put any money aside for their retirement years. And it's scary to think how many people might be in a position of only being able to rely on Social Security, which is not enough for most people to get by.
No, and this is where I go back to my grandparents' generation. You know, they built the three-legged stool. The idea of a good defined benefit pension, generally a union pension, a little bit of savings, and also Social Security, that triangular base to ensure that they got through their golden years with dignity and respect. Sadly, the defined benefit pension's basically been eviscerated, yeah. Except for a couple dinosaurs like me who are still hanging around. Our savings is being taken away because wages have been stagnant. Because again, I keep coming back to union density keeps falling. So the number of workers who are making good wages, that continues to fall. And look, they're doing their foolhardy best to destroy Social Security. So, you know, what was a solid three-legged stool, we may end up with something the size of a pencil when they're done whittling everything down.
Yeah, and people really get this. And these issues and these numbers are really upsetting. But what gives me a little bit of hope is in my conversations, and I have been part of a project where we've done educational dialogues with people in small towns and swing states. I've been to four times to three different swing states, and people across the political spectrum are absolutely outraged about CEO pay and the gaps between CEO and worker pay. And there's really strong support for solutions like increasing taxes on companies that have huge gaps between CEO and worker pay. And so I just hope that candidates out there, you know, as they're stumping leading up to the election, are hearing from people really across the political spectrum about this issue. And, you know, what are people going to do about it? Because people are really fed up, and it doesn't matter where you are on the political spectrum. In my experience, people get it, that this is not fair. No one deserves to make hundreds of times more than other people. Everyone contributes value to these companies, and they deserve their fair share.
Well, it comes back to, what's the worth of a worker? I mean, the worker's the person on the front line who's actually doing the job. I look at Chipotle. I don't see the CEO out there slopping stuff together. I see people, low wage workers who are struggling to make ends meet, show up every day and with a smile on their face, putting out the product, making the profits, and yet not sharing in it. And this is why I come back to why I'm such a supporter of labor unions and collective bargaining in the workplace. These companies are wildly profitable, and it isn't trickling down. I know we've been sold this idea that it's going to. It just never seems to happen. And this is where I think collective bargaining and pushing for stronger union policies is the way forward.
Absolutely. And I think we did see with the big three auto strike last year, the polls showed enormous public support for those striking workers, and especially around the themes that they were raising up, like why has worker pay not risen as fast as CEO pay at our companies? And I think that really resonated with people, and those employers knew that they needed to go to the bargaining table, because this wasn't just about their members. This was about a broader, public movement that is really tired of people at the top getting the bulk of the gains from all of this hard work that's going on. And so, I think that public sentiment played into the resolution of those strikes at the big three automakers. And I'm pleased to see a lot of other workers taking that kind of stand and raising these issues in ways that really does, contribute to better contracts and better working conditions.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. But the idea also of, and I hear this a lot, America's a meritocracy. If you work hard, you pull yourself up by the bootstraps, you have to get ahead. And we used to believe that, and we used to be that country. Because I think inherently we believe in the idea of a meritocracy. If you work hard, you play by the rules, you should get ahead. If you work hard for a company and that company is profitable, you should be able to share in those profits. Sadly, though, that hasn't been the reality. So for me, that frame as well, because if you look at worker pay to productivity, I don't know, somewhere around the mid to early 70s, wages deadline. Productivity's continued up at a 45-degree angle. Someone is reaping those benefits, and it's not the people who are doing the actual work.
Absolutely. I mean, those charts, we've seen them, I think, where wages are rising in tandem with productivity, and then boom, with the anti-union actions of Reagan and others, and the free trade agreements that really weakened power of unions, you see this disconnect between wages and productivity and declining power for unions. And we really need to turn that around. And, this idea that people at the top deserve what they make, just look at, you know, what happened with the financial crash. I mean, here were people who drove our economy off a cliff. They had been absolutely glorified as these geniuses, you know, and they threw their reckless, greedy actions threw millions of people out of their homes and out of their jobs. And there's just, there is no connection between fat CEO paychecks and, you know, brilliant managerial minds or anything like that. And the financial crash is just probably one of the most dramatic examples of that.
No, the wealthy in our CEO class, they've always got golden parachutes and really soft, feathery landings. Working people are the ones who get screwed over. You look at Donald Trump, someone who's filed bankruptcy multiple times. You don't see him on the street corner selling pencils. So let me ask you about the report. How's it being received by the broader public, by the political class? What kind of responses have you got from this?
Yeah, well, there is momentum in Washington to do some things around these issues. We have a new tax on stock buybacks. It's started out at a really low level of 1%, but President Biden and others are pushing to quadruple that. That was in his budget. There's also an effort with all of the public investment funds that are going to semiconductor companies through the CHIPS Act to try to prevent those companies from blowing that money on stock buybacks and to inflate their executive pay. So there's the beginnings of some things that I think are encouraging, but a lot more could be done. You know, we could just ban companies from getting federal contracts or subsidies if they're just going to waste the money on stock buybacks. And we could be taxing, like I said, companies that have extreme gaps. And the polling shows that strong majorities of every political group support doing things like that.
Let me ask you about the stock buybacks real quick, because, you know, we've talked about that. You know, it's basically just taking profits that could have been spent on investing in new technology, new equipment, better ways of doing things, better wages for workers, better health care, better retirement security, better anything. It could have been used, those profits could have been used in a million different ways other than buying these back and inflating CEO pay. Is there any argument for these? I mean, you know, the CEO class has got to be going, well, this is why we do it. It's not me. It's not my compensation I'm worried about. There's got to be another argument that they use for this, no?
They refer to it as excess profits. They don't have any really smart ideas at the moment on how to invest it.
They don't think
that they need to pay their workers anymore. And so this is their argument. And also, you know, make shareholders happy. When I Google to see, well, what's the news about stock buybacks? A lot of it is these analysts saying, well, invest in this company because they're going to do a lot of stock buybacks and that'll artificially pump up the value of your shares. You don't see as much of the obvious criticism that companies that have been blowing money on stock buybacks have been not properly investing in health and safety equipment like the railroads. All those airlines that got huge bailouts in the pandemic, if they hadn't been blowing billions on stock buybacks, we wouldn't have had to do those bailouts. There's issues around companies related to like baby formula, health and safety issues, and it turns out they were spending all their money on stock buybacks. So this is an issue that like everyone should see as something really screwed up in our economy that needs to be fixed.
Yes. For all those people who say we can't afford to do X, Y, or Z, we can't afford to feed children or get homes for homeless veterans or, you know, help seniors or, you know, any bit of that, we can. We just don't prioritize it because it looks to me, and I'm going to use a Tea Party frame here, this looks like a massive redistribution of wealth from the people who actually show up every day, do the work, and create the wealth into the pockets of people who the hardest day's labor they do is moving money from one pocket to another.
It's totally crass. The SEC did an investigation where they looked at on the day that a company announces a buyback. That's usually when they get this pump up in their share values. And the CEOs were like five times as likely to unload their personal stock when they got that little stock spike after a buyback announcement as they were on an ordinary day. So it's crass, it's blatant, it has nothing, it's the opposite of meritocracy because they're not doing anything to earn that extra money. It's just a financial maneuver. And that's money that could be so much more wisely invested in ways that would help workers, help the broader economy and be better for all of us.
Yeah, if your blood isn't boiling now, I don't know what gets your blood boiling more than being ripped off like we are. So last question I've got for you. I know we've talked about some ideas, but I want to hammer home. What do we do? How do we fix this? How do we stop it? What's the action that you're hoping comes out of this?
Yeah. Well, I agree with you that I think supporting unions and stronger rights to, you know, have the right to collective bargaining is really important. But there's things we can do on the policy end, too. We have power over corporations. We give them contracts. We give them grants, subsidies. We have power through tax policy. And we can use all of these as tools to attack this problem of the extreme gaps between CEO and worker pay that really are affecting all of us and dragging down our economy.
Ultimately, we need good policy. We need sound policy. We need people in positions of power who get this. And hopefully they will be reading your report. I hope folks will take a look at it as well. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at the 30th annual Executive Excess CEO Pay Report. We'll get that on social media. Sarah Anderson, I appreciate you taking time for us. Great stuff.
All right. Thanks, Rick.
I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Should we ban stock buybacks, as I've been saying for, ever? I see no productive use for it. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Church created what is...
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Stray evening shower, otherwise a frost advisory tonight, mostly clear and frosty with patchy fog. Lows in the low 30s. For tomorrow, we'll look for sunshine, highs into the low 60s. Nice Sunday ahead, sunny and highs in the mid-70s. Right now it's 53.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it's been announced that Vice President Kamala Harris is going to meet with the Teamsters on September the 16th. That is a Monday. Mark your calendars. They're going to have a roundtable, much like they did with Joe Biden and a lot of the other candidates, or I guess all of the other candidates, even Trump. And look, they even let Trump do a little press conference in front of the horses where he then went off and attacked E. Jean Carroll. But hey, never mind. Now, it figures the 16th would be the day that they choose, because that will be the day I'll be in Ottawa, Illinois, for the Midwest Labor Press Association's annual education conference, doing a little song and dance. If you're in the neighborhood, by all means, stop by and say hello, because we need more voices. We need more people coming out talking about labor issues and here to share some thoughts on, the big roundtable coming up on the 17th or the 16th, and, all the big stories in labor right now. I've asked our good friend Stephen Greenhouse to come share some thoughts. Stephen is a labor journalist, former New York Times guy. He's got some great work over at The Guardian that you should absolutely check out. Stephen, thanks for taking time for us.
Great to be here, Rick.
So there's going to be a big powwow. There's going to be Kamala Harris is going to go to the Teamsters all. They're going to have their round table. Does this matter?
Yeah, I think Harris meeting with the Teamsters and O'Brien is very important. I think O'Brien got himself into a very embarrassing situation, a big pickle that he's trying to get out of right now. He thought, I'm going to talk to the Republicans, I'm going to talk to the Democrats, I'll try to speak at both their conventions, and I'll show how important the Teamsters are, and I'll also communicate a pro-worker viewpoint, which he did at the Republican convention. Where he got into trouble, though, is the Republicans are really using his appearance at the Republican convention to say, the mighty Teamsters, the great leader, Sean O'Brien, are essentially endorsing Trump. O'Brien says, no, that's not true. And then a few weeks after O'Brien spoke at, you know, to the Teamsters, Trump gives this notorious interview with far right troll, the world's richest man, Elon Musk. And Trump, showing his real hatred, dislike of unions, says, it's great to fire striking workers. And like, what could be more hostile to unions, to collective action, to solidarity than firing strikers? It's not only super anti-labor, but it's actually, you know, Trump is lauding, praising companies for breaking the law. It's illegal to fire strikers. So now, that was hugely embarrassing to Sean O'Brien after he said such nice things about Trump after Republican convention. And O'Brien was so embarrassed, he issued a statement calling what Trump said economic terrorism. So I think O'Brien's very embarrassed. I think he's trying to get on the right side of things. And I think, I could be wrong, that Trump is so embarrassed and so kicked him in the teeth, he thinks it's time to endorse Kamala Harris. But first he needs to meet with Harris.
Do you think it matters? Do you think an endorsement now matters, given the fact that we're time's getting short?
So you're in Pennsylvania, Rick, and you know that you are really the keystone of keystone states right now, and every little bit counts. And while the Republicans ran ads saying, Sean O'Brien, the Teamsters, spoke at our convention, this sort of, you know, making nice to us, saying, you know, we're pro-worker, you know, having the Teamsters officially and loudly endorse Kamala Harris, I think would help somewhat. It would help nullify, negate, compensate for O'Brien speaking at the convention. You know, more important, and I don't know if there's enough time for the Teamsters to fully do it, is really mobilize the staff and as much of the rank and file as possible to elect Harris, because, you know, as I've written for years, Trump is extremely anti-union.
Yep.
He might play footsie with unions sometimes, but he's issued statements condemning former AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka, you know, condemning the head of the UAW local in Lordstown when the plant shut down, you know, condemning the president of the electrical workers local in Indianapolis when the carrier plant closed. He doesn't like unions. He really likes kicking union leaders and trying to divide union members from
And look, this thing with O'Brien is mission accomplished. Look, it has worked out exactly as I predicted it would. And look, not because I'm brilliant, not because I have a crystal ball, but because I pay attention. There was never a world where O'Brien was going to be able to speak at both conventions. It's never happened. Conventions are not a place for ego-driven TED Talks. That's not what that is. And look, the Republicans got their show pony. They got the guy who's going to say nice things so that when the Teamsters do, if they do endorse Kamala Harris, you know the first ad that's going to come out is O'Brien looking at Trump going, he's one tough SOB.
He's one tough SOB who called for firing people who go on strike. So,
well, they're going to omit that part.
I know they will omit that. You know, as I said, I think O'Brien's embarrassed. Thought it was a good idea to speak to the Republican convention. He didn't realize how much that would backfire on him. And I think he'd be smart. You know, he's the leader of one of the nation's most important unions, and leaders are supposed to lead. And in ways, O'Brien is wimping out, saying, you know, 50% of our members support Trump, 50% of our members support Biden. Support Harris. You know, I'm not going to tell them what to do. You know, but one candidate is extremely anti-union and did very little for workers in his 4 years as president. And Harris, you know, has really fought for workers and for unions for years, you know, for nursing home workers, for fast food workers. And you know, one of her very first rallies after she announced that she's running for president was, you know, at the UAW headquarters in Detroit. Sean Fain, the UAW, you know, the American Federation of Teachers, the steelworkers, the UAW, so many unions are backing Harris because they think she'll do much more for labor, she'll do much more for the average worker than Trump will.
Right. Now, the analogy I've been using, you know, because you go, the unions are 50-50 and, you know, we're going to let the members decide, we're going to put our finger in the wind. And it's, you know, for me, it's like, you know, if you're going to have a picnic, half the people want arsenic, half the people want Kool-Aid. We're going to let them decide whether it's arsenic or Kool-Aid. And you go, no, no, a leader would go, arsenic's going to kill you. We probably shouldn't do that.
So, you know, Trump, I'm a New Yorker, Rick. I followed Trump for decades. He's a great con man and a great demagogue. And a lot of people lap up the stuff that he's the snake oil he's selling. And I think it's sad that so many, you know, hardworking Americans who are struggling to make ends meet and support their families support a guy who really has done very little to help workers. He did zilch to raise the minimum wage. He cut back the budget for OSHA and reduced safety protections for many workers. He even reduced protections for coal miners. And he said he was going to, you know, the coal miners are the most important workers, and he would be the hero for coal workers, for coal miners. And you know, his administration took dozens of actions to weaken unions, make it harder to unionize, make it harder to bargain collectively. And he really isn't a friend of workers, and he isn't a friend of unions. And I feel very sorry that so many workers think he's their guy. Yes, he talks tough, and I understand a lot of, you know, workers like people who talk tough. Yeah,
no, I do. Look, I'll be honest with you. Alpha male myself. I like someone who's going to ball up their digits and get in there and throw a couple of punches, which is why I like Tim Wall so much. Which brings me to your
tough talk is cheap. It doesn't help you pay the rent. It doesn't help you, you know, afford childcare. It doesn't lower, you know, raise your salary. It doesn't, you know, give you the leave you need when you have a baby, when you need to take care of a sick parent. You know, Trump's talking tough makes people feel good, but it really hasn't improved people's lives. Yeah, and I think Harris, you know, you might not love Kamala Harris, but if you look at what she's about, you know, she's been fighting for workers for decades, you know, trying to help the lowest paid workers, fighting for higher minimum wage, helping all sorts of lower income workers unionize. She's fully backed Biden's efforts to increase manufacturing, to enact the Infrastructure Act, which is creating hundreds of thousands of good paying jobs, many of them union jobs, and many of them not for the college educated, but for, you know, good old blue-collar Americans who want to make a good living and want their kids to make a good living, even without going to college.
No, I look at making those places that used to be places that are going to be again. The reason I had you on is your most recent article on young male voters. And look, I would argue male voters in general have been swayed by that kind of machismo, that tough guy image, with this idea that somehow the tough guy is going to help make their lives better. And as you point out in your piece, you know, the gulf between young men voters and young women voters has probably never been larger than it is right now.
So the reason I wrote that article is I was reading two articles in my former newspaper, the New York Times, one about, you know, young women overwhelmingly support Harris, like by 69% to 28%. I mean, more than 2-1, women under 30 support Harris over Trump. But among men under 30, a majority of them support Trump, 53% to 40%. So there's a humongous gender gap, like the biggest I've ever seen, of 51 points between how women under 30 and men under 30 feel. And this piece I wrote that, you know, I can certainly understand why young women like Harris. You know, she's an inspiring role model for them. She believes firmly in fighting for reproductive freedom, for abortion rights, and she'd break the ultimate glass ceiling, becoming the first woman president. But I wrote that I'm mystified. You know, why do all these young men support Trump? Yes, he talks tough. Yes, he's macho. Yes, he has, you know, Hulk Hogan endorsing him. But I say, but when you cut through all the insults and cut through all the you know, tough talk, he's, you know, he does very little for workers. He does very little. You know, what was the main thing he did in his 4 years as president? He
tax cuts for the rich.
Taxes super much for the rich, for the ultra rich, and for corporations. And he cut taxes only a teeny bit for the average worker. You know, Harris wants much fairer tax system. She wants to build 3 million housing units to help bring down housing prices. You know, that's one of the biggest problems for young Americans, for young men, for young women, is affording a first house. She wants to provide a $25,000 subsidy for people buying their first house. America is the only wealthy country in the world where all workers are not guaranteed paid parental leave. She's been hugely vocal about wanting to enact paid parental leave and paid family leave of 12 weeks. That would be super important for many workers. You know, Trump's against all that stuff. Trump, many workers, you know, want to go to college, want their kids to go to college. Trump is against, you know, student loan forgiveness, canceling student debt. He wants to cut all sorts of, you know, federal grants to make college more affordable. Harris, you know, Harris is for all that. I mean, Trump isn't going to, you know, the point of the piece I wrote is that Trump is not going to help young men improve their lives. Yes, he'll make you feel good by saying immigrants, it's all the fault of immigrants, it's all the fault of China. But tough talk, you know, doesn't help you pay the rent. It doesn't, you know, help you raise your kids. And Trump is a very attractive, you know, snake oil salesman, tough guy, but he hasn't delivered for workers. He didn't in his 4 years as president, and I don't see him doing much to deliver to workers again if he's elected.
Well, I mean, I look at it, and I look at a lot of the social media posts that I've seen. In fact, you know, Elon Musk had one of Kamala Harris and what appears to be some kind of a red Russian outfit or something. And he asked the question, can you believe that she wears this outfit? And the answer is no, because she never wore that outfit. That's an AI version of something that you put together. But it's this constant pushing this misinformation, these alternative facts, this alternative reality, where they've created this world that it's going to be, you know, young men are, you know, going to be like their grandfathers used to be. And, you know, this kind of imaginary world, this fantasy world where they're the center of attention.
So I've been thinking, Rick, that unfortunately, Elon Musk in many ways resembles that horrible Wisconsin Senator Joseph McCarthy, who built his political career in the 1950s by dishonestly saying there are all these communists, that you're a communist and you're a communist and you're a communist and you're a homosexual and you're a communist and you're a communist. And he just lied. And like, he was a con man, and unfortunately too many people lapped it up. And Musk is being just like Joseph McCarthy now. If Musk weren't a billionaire, if you're just a normal person, a normal politician, he'd be run out of town on a rail for being so dishonest and for sliming people like that. And it's sad that Musk, who's a very smart guy, but he's a troll and he's so dishonest. And he'd say anything to help Donald Trump. Like he says that Kamala Harris is a communist. Kamala Harris is you know, she supports the free market, the system, with some protections for workers, you know, with fairer taxes. She's so not a communist. It's like, for Musk to call her communist shows how either colossally dishonest he is or colossally ignorant he is about history. And it's really sad. And people should not tolerate it when someone is so dishonest about what's going on.
No, I think he's brilliant. I think he's a very bright guy. He knows exactly what he's doing. There's no dishonesty here. He knows exactly what he's doing. He's spreading misinformation. It's the reason he bought Twitter. It's the reason he's done everything that he has done with Twitter to destroy it, for it being any voice for the average person. This is about paid people getting their voice heard. And especially now that we're learning more about Russian money infiltrating our media structure, it seems like, I don't know, it seems like some of that's filtering into Elon Musk.
I don't know if he needs Russian money. I think some of the Russian propaganda is unfortunately seeping into his head, Rick. Yeah, I think
But it's all of that. I mean, that's the.
I think, you know, like Trump, I think he admires Putin. You know, he admires Modi. You know, India's somewhat authoritarian ruler. He was a big fan of Bolsonaro, the far right authoritarian ruler of Brazil. You know, he loves right wing folks, and it's really dangerous for billionaires to throw their immense financial political propaganda power in favor of any candidate, especially a candidate like Trump, who threatens to be a dictator on day one, who's talked about terminating the Constitution, who's talked about weaponizing the Justice Department to go against people like you, whom he might not like. I mean, you know, it's like, who's he going to go after? You know, he's going to have the IRS audit folks because he doesn't like them. I mean, it's
yes.
Very wholesome. Yeah.
Yes, in fact, that's already happened during his tenure, if you remember. So last line of questioning I've got for you, because obviously, you know, the misinformation campaigns that we're seeing, some of these, the story of these recent indictments of these two over at RT and Tenet, this has brought some renewed interest in Russian money and Russian propaganda. You know, how do we, how do we, How do we move past this? I love the fact that we're seeing more strikes. I saw some 10,000 hotel workers in the streets over Labor Day. I see my Teamster brothers and sisters in Detroit at Petroleum on strike. I see a lot of job actions. I see a lot of rediscovering solidarity. What's the way forward here?
That's a great question. I've been a journalist for 30, 40 years. You know, I really care about writing the truth and telling people the truth, but it's very hard to get the truth to many Americans who just are bought into this false reality, you know, that Trump is God and Trump is going to solve everyone's problems. As I said, I'm a New Yorker. I followed Trump for 40 years. I've seen that he's a fraud and a womanizer and misogynist and everything. And I'm kind of appalled that, you know, the race is, you know, so many people support Trump. So I think it's important, you know, for everyone who wants to preserve our democracy and have a president who supports workers and supports unions and supports, you know, reducing, you know, wealth inequality and income inequality, to get out there, to tell their friends, to tell everyone that, you know, to vote and to make clear that Trump is not a friend of workers. You know, he talks about being a dictator on day one. And you know, many of my friends are talking about, you know, here in New York, about going to Pennsylvania for several weekends or for several weeks. I think it's very important for everyone to get involved to help preserve our democracy. Lynn Cheney is not in love with Kamala Harris. You know, she is a conservative Republican, but I respect her so much when she said, look, the important thing now is to preserve our democracy, and that means defeating Donald Trump. And if that means I need to vote for Kamala Harris, who's more liberal than I would like, that's what we got to do, because the most important thing is to preserve our democracy against someone who says he will be a dictator on day one.
There you go. Stephen, I appreciate the time. As always, great work over there at The Guardian.
Thank you.
The other places that you're at. We'll get some links out so folks can take a look at it. Also, make sure you check out Stephen's book, Beaten Down, Worked Up, The Past, Present, and Future of the American Labor Labor. We'll get links out of that as well. Stephen, thanks so much.
Okay, sure. Be well. Thanks.
I want to hear your thoughts. Seriously? I mean, I know it's a which side are you on issue, but not that hard to figure out. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. This day in labor history, the year was 1860. That was the day that Jane Addams was born in Cedarville, Illinois. Her family was wealthy, and her father served as a state senator. In 1881, Jane Addams visited London with her friend Ellen Gates Starr. There, the two women were inspired by Toynbee Hall, a settlement house which worked with the poor and working class in the city. They decided to establish a similar effort in Chicago. They founded Hull House in an immigrant neighborhood of Italian, Greek, and Jewish workers. Hull House grew to become a complex of facilities that offered kindergarten, daycare, lectures, and cultural programs, and an important space for women trade unionists to hold meetings. The women of Hull House became one of the leading proponents for workplace safety in the nation, pushing for laws and reforms to help workers. During the 1894 Pullman workers' strike, Jane Addams visited the community and had meals with the women workers. She was able to convince the workers' strike committee to agree to sit down to arbitration, but the Pullman Company officials staunchly refused to negotiate. The refusal of the company to bargain and the rising anger of the workers was an eye-opener for Jane. Later, she reflected, quote, "During all those dark days of the Pullman strike, the growth of class bitterness was most obvious." Before the strike, she wrote, quote, "There had been nothing in my experience that had revealed that distinct cleavage of society which a general strike, at least momentarily, affords." In 1931, Jane Addams was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for her lifelong advocacy for working class women and children and her strong stand for peace during World War I. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So we'll wrap today's program up with some emails that I got. Tina writes, Why don't we hear your brand of common sense economic talk on other news programs? All we hear is how things are going to affect businesses. Yes, Tina writes, business is important, but what good is a business if no one has any money? Keep up the amazing work. Love you. I love you too. Thank you for the email. Now look, you know, ultimately, I don't think you hear worker-centric economics, you know, anywhere else because it doesn't pay. And as we started today off, a lot of the right-wing messaging is all about destroying government. It's all about shifting power to the hands of the wealthy. It's all about deregulation. It's all about tearing us apart. So, you know, Russian misinformation is perfect for that, because if we're a divided nation, we're a nation that's easily manipulated. And if we can bounce the economy up and down, make workers a little unstable, tighten that belt to the last notch to where it starts to hurt, easily to manipulate. And when they start using their levers, social media, right-wing talk, right-wing cable news, all of this stuff to have a coordinated message. And that coordinated message is tax cuts for rich people is good. Government is bad. Individual wealth accumulation is good. Workers unionizing, fighting for better wages, hours, conditions, bad. You know, someone sent me a meme the other day that said, you know, if you think billionaires are part of your problem, you know, there's something wrong with you. No, they don't affect my daily life right now, but they do in fact affect our lives, actually daily. Lower wages, less health care, less retirement security, all of the deregulation that's happened. Yeah, billionaires have had a lot to do with our daily lives. And for me, it's one of the reasons that I say we need to get rid of them. We can do without billionaires. We do need entrepreneurs. We need people who are smart and organize things well, and they should be rewarded, absolutely. But the kind of obscene, outweighted power that someone like Elon Musk has, that's not good for democracy. Not at all. So when you talk about common sense economics, what good is an economy? And I come back to this. What good is an economy if it doesn't have workers prosper? If it doesn't allow the people who actually show up, do the work, get their hands dirty, their backs ache, their brows sweat, their tears at the end of the day, the paycheck not going far enough. What good is an economy if those folks aren't doing well? If your ham and eggers are struggling, if the folks with the jelly bucket have no bucket, what good is an economy then? If it's only to enrich the handful. This is where Randall's email comes in. Randall writes, when you pay for something, it matters where the money goes. He says there's something called the velocity of money multiplier. I call it a reverberation effect. He says when you pay Walmart for your groceries, a good chunk of it goes directly to Walmart's headquarters in Arkansas. He says, however, when you pay for a local oil change, the mechanic spends it locally. The money circulates locally a number of times before it leaves town. Thus, the multiplier. And as I've said, it reverberates. It bangs around. So if you have a local shopkeep, which we try to use at every opportunity, go there. Help them. Because that money is then spent next door. Might be your business. Might be your job. That's why I'm such a big fan of hyper-local. Why I'm such a big fan of prevailing wage laws, to ensure that jobs stay local and that those wages that those workers earn are good enough to help stimulate that local economy. Because I know it's going to circulate. I know it's going to reverberate. I know it's going to help build up the bottom. It's not going to go to some headquarters somewhere. It's not going to go to some vault. It's going to go to the mom and pop. It's going to go to my neighbor. It's going to go to me. And that's what we should be asking simple questions on. So common sense economics, I don't know much about, but the fact that we want an economy that works for working people, that's what we should be demanding. We should be demanding our politicians care about the bottom. And this is why I think Biden's comments about a bottom-up economy is where we should be going. Now, look, I had a very rich uncle who said, look, I can give you all kinds of money. I can give you all kinds of money. I'm eventually going to get it back. because you're going to have to come through me to get what you want and need. And that seems logical. So instead of giving tax cuts and the ability to avoid taxes to rich people, how about we tax them, give the money to the people who are at the bottom who actually work for it, and then they will spend that money in those stores, and it will then go up. And then we have this cycle, and we could continue that because we've done it in the past. Not radical, not communist, smart. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast, video@freespeech.org. And as always, thanks for being here.
The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@therickssmithshow.com.
This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM. W245 CT Hayward. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.